Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. So welcome, everybody, to our Big Blend Radio Second Wednesday Books and Author Show with our friends over at Books Forward. Today, we're really excited to welcome author Kendra Petty. She's going to give us a glimpse into her incredible life story. And I say it's incredible. It's actually pretty darn crazy, but there's a lot of hope and resilience to it. Her memoir about her life is called I Can't Believe I'm Not Dead, Escaping Abuse, a Cult, Attempted Murder, and Other Insanities. It's out now, and you can go right to her website to get it and learn more. Go to KendraPettyOfficial.com. So welcome, Kendra. How are you?
I'm great, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here because you've got a crazy story, right? And it's in so many different ways. And, you know, sometimes when you have all these things happen, physical, emotional abuse, losing loved ones, cults, let's talk about that, mafia style kind of life or death situations, there's moments where you can go, what's the point?
Right.
And you have to kind of realize, like, you still belong here, mm-hmm. you know, and it's weird because you can either, I mean, don't you go through all those different parts of your psyche of like pity party, because you kind of have to let off go, but you can't have a pity party for long, depending on the circumstance, right? Those
Absolutely.
Different emotions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of emotions. But, you know, I've always been a big, big believer in not getting stuck. I think so many people are survivors and they go through trauma and they go through tragedy and they get, you know, PTSD and they get stuck in that. And I've always tried to never get stuck, never sit in anger or blame or woe is me. You know, and that's the first step really in moving beyond any trauma or tragedy and moving out of, you know, moving into healing.
In your beginning of your book, you talk about taking personal responsibility as an adult, right? Mm-hmm. But even if you're a child, when you were a child, your mom was mentally ill. And, you know, you've got to think back to, I have a friend who has a mom, same kind of thing. And I don't think we even understood what mentally ill was as teenagers at that time.
Right.
And the doctors were kind of working on it. But like one moment, she's got like a butcher's knife at us. And we're like, holy crap, you know? So it's like, you don't understand all that stuff, but it is abusive to the child, regardless of what the parent is going through.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, mental illness is, I mean, it's very sad. And, you know, thank goodness today there's much more education and knowledge around it. But, you know, when I was young, there really, and living in a small town in Oklahoma, there was no real mental care. And we were living, I grew up in a cult that my mother and her husband started, a religious cult, and we weren't allowed to go to the doctor because they believed God would heal us. So even if there was care, my mother would not have sought it because she believed God would heal her.
There's still groups out there doing that, which is freaky, and I want to go rescue everybody out of them. But to be able to get out, this is this the religious cult thing is, it's creepy and scary because, you know, how do you get out of that as a child to move forward to your own belief system of knowing there's so much more? I think now with the internet, I think there's some groups out there that we are pretty famous that people know about, and I don't need to name them, but I could, and I might. But we all know who I'm talking about.
Yes, we do.
I think, thank God, you know, as much as we all, you know, whine about Google and all of that stuff, I think having the internet and all these tools allows kids to, you know, thank God for libraries, quite frankly, because they at least maybe be able to sneak in and get this information in from school, mm-hmm. if they're able to get away, to realize that there's something beyond what's going on at home. For you, what was that turning point of understanding there's more and beyond? Because they try to brainwash you, basically.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. We were totally brainwashed and completely controlled. We were cut off from the real world. We weren't allowed to associate with people outside the church. We went to a Christian school. And then when we weren't in school, we were always in church or we were at home having Bible study and reading the Bible. But my parents, my mom and my stepdad's interpretation of the Bible was just very bizarre. And a lot of it was focused on the Old Testament. And so that their religion paved the way for more abuse physical abuse in the name of God, mental and verbal abuse in the name of God, and also the abuse that we weren't allowed to get medical care because they believed God would heal us. So, you know, for me, just I didn't realize that the rest of the world didn't live in an abusive situation. Like I knew it wasn't right, and it was very physically painful. And every day was, you know, 911, hair on fire with my mother. It was every day she was, you didn't know when she was going to explode, but you knew it would happen. And it was just miserable. But you just get so caught up in that, you know, in being abused, and, you know, it really just warps your mind. And you get, as a child, I just got stuck in it. And so I didn't want to rock the boat and, you know, get beat more. So I just went along with this religion and the Bible and the cult. But when I was 17, I went to Haiti in the West Indies and spent a summer doing missionary work. And I got to know a lot of people my age or a little older, and realized that not everybody was living in this insane life. And, you know, it was a whole summer of not getting beat and not having to deal with my mother. And it was very eye-opening. And so when I got back and started my senior year of high school, I knew that I had to find a path out. I knew that I had to find a way out, even though, you know, I only had one more year and I was going to go to college. And but in the middle of my senior year, I left under terrible circumstances. I mean, my mother was beating me to an inch of my life. And I got up and ran out of the house and kept running and never looked back and never went back. And I moved in with my dad for the last half of my senior year. And then I eventually moved to New York City after high school and worked my way through college and started my career. So I never really looked back, but you are right. It's hard mentally to unwind from that. So I spent many years thinking I needed to find a church or reading the Bible to figure out, because I'm gay, and I came out in New York City in my early 20s, and I really had a hard time for a while rectifying that. And, you know, I would read the Bible, and my girlfriend would read it with me. She was raised Catholic, and, you know, just trying to understand it. And I finally just realized, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm not going to go to hell. This is how I was born. This is who I am. I didn't create this. And as I've gotten older, I've really moved away from religion and the Bible. And, you know, I have a very different view now on the Bible.
Yeah, I bet. I was going to ask you about that. I was like, okay, I know. And what's sad is, you know, for those who are believers and, you know, for them, it's hard to, like, you know, it's like what your parents did is ruining it for those who are believers, you know, who are Christian or, you know, different beliefs, really, you know, Hindu, you know, whatever, you know, it's a belief system. But when you push your belief system, I was very lucky in that, you know, I went to all kinds of churches, because in boarding school, you had to, like, I went to 1 year in boarding school in South Africa, and if you go, you have to go to church. And we had 50 churches.
Wow.
In one tiny historic town.
Uh-huh.
And the military base and schools and one of the wildest, most liberal colleges you can imagine. And I kept, I was in permanent detention, and I just kept walking out, and I was like, well, I'm in detention, who cares?
Right.
And I would go, I was playing pool with guys back in the, nothing bad, but like I was doing whatever, you know, nothing bad sexually or anything, just I wanted freedom because I was used to freedom from travel and things like that. And having, it was a really close society, very close-minded, and eventually, you know, myself and some of my friends, we all left at the same time because it was a very creepy setup of that school. It was really messed up. And we all left. In fact, my best friend's father basically took the principal and shoved him up against the wall over this stuff that was going on there. Anyway, but that belief system was, I was lucky because I thought, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going to a different church each day or each Sunday. And I learned, you know, when I wasn't hiding from it and doing smoking cigarettes and playing pool. The army guys. Yeah. The army guys, you know, it was like, you know, whatever, but, you know, then you just get back in line with everybody else and no one knows, but except for you did stink,
That's funny.
But you learned these different religions, and and I remember people in all these big robes. I'm like, what the hell are you doing in these robes? Like, what is that? So it was just, you're flinging things around, and I'm like, what is this, a dance? And I'm not knocking the religion anybody, please, it's not. But I mean, this is a kid's mentality too. But I still question what they were doing. But it is a very hard thing, because it's what you are raised. It is like, as a kid, you're raised with morals and certain things. And luckily, I was raised to have this, very open, questioning mentality, which does get me in trouble. But it is my choice to either follow or not. It's really hard to imagine having that, like that. Being raised that way, where this is how things are in the world. That's it's kind of like that Jim Carrey movie, where it was in the bubble or
Oh
something. It's
I know the
kind of,
movie you're talking about. It
yeah,
really
it's
was, and we weren't allowed to watch TV, listen to the radio, read the newspaper, read
that's
magazines. We
creepy.
were literally just sequestered into just God and the Bible and religion, and we couldn't date, none of that. We couldn't go to friends' houses. Finally, in my senior year, I started going to two of my best friends' houses, and of course, when I moved in with my dad, I could, basically do whatever I wanted. My dad was very cool and very laid back in that manner. But for the first 3 months that I lived with my father, I just watched TV. When I wasn't in school, I was so
Yeah,
fascinated.
like, what is this?
I spent 3 months watching TV, and finally, after 3 months, I was like, what am I doing? Like, it's such a waste of time. I was very athletic and I played a lot of sports and loved to be outside. So, and to this day, I'm not a big TV watcher. I'll watch a movie here or there, but I'm not a huge TV watcher.
Well, I just, to be able to formulate, and I say this because, for those listening that are in different circumstances, you can be an adult and be trapped in your own issues, where your whoever's surrounding you could be trapping you, and then you start that tread water thing. And I think that's what I wanted to touch on, is there's a tread water, and do you take baby steps? Do you take the grand leap of faith? To get out of a situation is very difficult. I watch people all the time. It's like, oh, well, so and so's, they're abused, and they'll just go right back to him. But you don't know what the tie-in. You don't know how far the claws are of
That's right.
someone holding someone captive.
That's right.
You never know. And so everyone has their time, and sometimes you have to bide time, because it is often life or death. What is interesting to me is, for you going from this very religious background, and yeah, you're going to hell for being gay. How dare you? But then you move forward from that, and then you get married, and that wasn't exactly the best situation either. So does that, it's weird. We repeat things.
We definitely do. It's not as though I sought out, and I don't know that anybody intentionally seeks these situations out, but I certainly didn't seek out to get married to a woman that was extremely physically abusive. She had a hidden drug habit and was an alcoholic, and but I loved her very, very much, and she had a daughter, and I loved my stepdaughter very, very much. But I realized, it took me a little bit to realize that I had gotten myself back into a situation exactly, almost exactly like as the one that I grew up in, with my mother and being very abusive. And my wife, when she was high or drunk, she was very physically abusive, and she broke my bones on a number of
Oh my God.
occasions. I have scars all over my body from her abuse. I had to have her arrested. I would have to fly home in the middle of the night on a business trip to find her and my daughter, because I couldn't get a hold of them, didn't know where they were. So I knew she was out, getting high or whatever, and I was worried about my stepdaughter. But I realized that I needed to get out of that marriage. But it took me, I was in it 6 years I was with her, and it took me a long time to unwind from that. And I was devastated to lose my family, lose my wife and my daughter. It was very devastating to me. But it is, I think, when you grow up in trauma, and you grow up in an abusive home, and all the there's a lot of other trauma that I went through growing up, not just my mother, you have a much higher tolerance level for BS and for bad situations. And for me, I have such a high tolerance level for not good situations. And I also, for many years, had a lack of boundaries. and didn't adhere to red flags that I would see. You know, I would ignore them. And you know, all of that is conditioning of growing up in an abusive home. And so it did take me time to break free from that. But then from there, I went right into another terrible situation because of my lack of boundaries and red flags. And that's the situation of my work, and what happened to me there. So I feel like, you know, it took me decades to learn how to set boundaries and walk away from toxic situations. But I feel like I'm much better at it now.
Well, I know you worked with some people that you basically we could say is like the mafia, you know, and there's who I call them, you know, there's gangs around the world, right? There's gangs, there's cults, they're all the same to me in different, some of it, like when people talk about emotional abuse, I find emotional abuse almost worse than physical abuse. There's and you we and really all of it is depending on how the person who's the victim taking it, you know, it some people, you know, physical abuse is worse. Everyone's individually different, and sometimes people get into a victim game of who, which is sad. It's probably first I wanted to say sickening, but it's people go through it as part of going through processes, right? Everybody's at a different stage of however they're healing of whatever they're healing. Because life, no matter what, I don't care who you are, no one's it ain't all a bed of roses. And that's why there's thorns on roses to remind us about that. And, you know, red roses are often red flags. But, you know, going through these different situations, part of it is possibly understanding that you've dealt through that. So it's you almost become this thick-skinned superhero to get through situations. So when you see another thing, it's like, oh yeah, life is like that. So who cares? You know? You know what I mean? Because I've handled this before I can do anything, you know?
I mean, I think it's made me more empathetic for sure, but I thank goodness I was born with just this incredible internal strength, just a very strong will. You know, not everyone's born with that, so I was very, very fortunate to be born with that kind of inner strength. And then I think, you know, just this continuous cycle of trauma and tragedy that continued to happen to me. It just made me stronger, definitely made me stronger, but it's given me the ability. And, you know, that's why I wrote the book. Well, I wrote the book for me and I used a ghostwriter. And when I first hired her, I told her I did not want to publish this. I just need to document my insane life. It's been crazy and it's been so much trauma and so much tragedy. And as we moved through it over the 3 years that it took us to write it, she was really pushing me to publish it. She's a published author herself. And used to work for two of the big five publishing houses as a publisher. So she knew her stuff and she was like, you have to publish this. And I pushed back for several years and finally I said, okay, I will consider it. And I finally just decided there's got to be a reason why I am still alive. I have escaped death on so many occasions, more than what's in the book. There's got to be a reason why I'm still alive. And I felt like maybe it's to share my story and maybe my story can help other people in similar situations. And help them learn to not just survive, but learn to thrive in life.
When you were doing this process, and I really appreciate your honesty about a ghostwriters. Ghostwriters are fantastic. Majority of these big biographies and memoirs are ghostwritten, seriously. And it doesn't it's not cheating. I want people to know that. It's about having someone craft the story so that we can ingest it. And in the way that, you know, that the way it gets through to us, right? And storytelling is, I think, probably one of the biggest ways of learning is storytelling, is through stories and personal stories. That's how we identify. If it's all Hollywood fiction, how do you really know? You know what I mean? You don't, it, this is the real stuff, you know? When you were going through this process, because then in a weird way, it's almost like therapy, right? So this is a
It is
therapeutic
100%,
process.
100%. I didn't even realize how therapeutic it would be. It was very hard. I mean, 3 years of having to talk about all the things I went through. And I never, you know, growing up, we were not allowed to show emotion. We had to be very even keeled, even though my mother was more emotional, you know, for all of us. She represented just an extreme amount of emotion, but we had to be deadpanned, no emotion. And we did not talk about anything other than school and the Bible and God. And so I
Oh,
didn't grow
Jesus.
up talking about things. And so as an adult, I didn't talk about the things I went through. And I have friends that I've been friends with for 25, 30 years. They read the book and they were like, oh my God, like, how did I not know any of this about you? You're like one of my best friends. And I said, but I just don't talk about it. So having to talk about it with Jessica, my ghostwriter, because we would have sessions on the weekends, and in the evenings where I would just talk and I would just share my stories and the things that I had been through, and she would record it. And then she would have it transferred, into writing, and then she would put it in a methodical order. But I read and reread this book so many times. I talked about it, and then I had to read it and edit it and re-edit it. I was very involved in the editing process, and it was extremely painful. There were some Saturdays where I had to go, Saturday afternoon. It was just so emotional and hard. I had to go make a cocktail and get through the rest of the
I'm
day
with you. Yeah,
editing.
because it is. Well, I talk, I've had things happen in my life and, worked and worked and worked on it. And then, we'll do an interview or something. And I remember a few interviews coming out on some things and going, oh my God, now I have to, you remember everything. So when your memory, you start to remember things and you question your memory and but then you relive it. And so I just want to say thank you for writing everything or
Oh,
putting your
thank you.
story out there, because I know that pain is so hard to keep reliving and reliving and reliving and reliving, because it makes those things bigger in a
Yeah,
way,
it
right?
really
Once you
does.
and you can't live with it stuffed away either, because that's not healthy. And there's this weird balance. But through this process, do you see that when you are a survivor, and then you also have, the survival of cancer, you've been through a ton. As you're going through things, do you realize how observant you are, how being observant creates a survival system? It's a communication system. It's a knowing what to do, when, how to tread water, when to tread, when to jump, when to attack, what to do. Has that in a, and this sounds weird, but in a weird way, it becomes this new skill, being observant through really negative situations.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just the amount that I've grown, even in the last 5 years, before 5 years ago, I was really just in survival mode my whole life, just, trying to survive, build a career, be successful. I wanted to make a lot of money. That was my focus. I didn't necessarily ever want to get married and have kids. I ended up getting married and had a stepdaughter, and then I really embraced it, and then lost it. So that was a huge lesson for me. But for so many years, I was just in survival mode and just focusing on climbing the corporate ladder and surviving, living, because when this organized crime family tried to kill me, it led to
Oh, hell no.
they weren't successful, but it led to so many illnesses in my body, just physical ailments. I developed Graves'
Just
disease and then later cancer because
wow.
they poisoned me for quite some time, which made me very, very ill. So the ramifications of being poisoned and what it did to my body, and then leading to Graves' disease, and then leading to cancer, and what chemo did to my body. I call
Jeez.
it chasing the pain. It was,
Yeah, really.
15 years of just trying to stay physically healthy and functional. And, I work at a really high level in terms of the amount of work that I do and the speed of which I do things. And so I carry a lot, and I'm always very busy. And my friends are like, how do you go so much? And I think it just goes back to the inner strength that I was born with, and just learning after each trauma that I went through, learning how to pull myself out of it and move forward. And the last 5 years, particularly when I hit a wall 5 years ago and said, this has got to stop. I have got to live in peace. I've got to stop living in fear, because I really shut down after the attempted murder, and I didn't let people in my house for many, many years. I shut down my social media. I lived in fear. I was scared that they were going to come back, and they weren't successful in killing me, but they were successful in killing one of the CEOs. So I was worried and scared for my life. So about 5 years ago, I hit that wall and said, this is ridiculous. I'm always a very social person, but I hadn't made friends. I just lived it, worked and lived at home and lived in fear and traveled a lot for work. But, and I would date, but always long distance. No, never but anybody in my town. So I
Yeah,
would,
don't come to my house. I'll come to yours.
exactly. So yeah,
Yeah.
it's been the last 5 years has just been an incredible path of healing, and the book was an important part of that healing for sure.
Well, I appreciate it, because I think, everyone goes through some kind of something, and it big, small, and like I said, everyone's pain is different from everybody. We all are different. Each person is different. And the other thing too, when you come from a family background like that, and your brother was it was a big deal for you in your life, your best friend, and
Biggest, biggest, biggest trauma I went through, biggest, most life-changing thing that I went through was the death of my brother. He was my best friend, and that was, if there's anything in my life that I could change, I would change that day.
Yeah, that I was sharing before we recorded, we had to get out of South Africa in a very crazy way, and I know that, I mean, they would call my mom and tell her where I was, and things, it was crazy. But anyway, we get over here, and I think it was a couple years back in this country, and my mom's brother, and she comes from a very abusive family, incredibly insane, just crazy. And her brother and her, they were the pair out of the six kids. These two, they had each other's back through all the abuse, and they would get it the most because they were in the top three of, being elder in the family. But it was traumatizing to the other kids. They were watching it, So there's all that weird, it's just a sick mess, And her brother died while we were here, or they were close, but he was murdered. And we found out on TV. It was like, what the hell?
That's horrible.
And it was probably, when you lose someone like that, like your brother, that's such a rock in your life where you feel like, okay, we can get through things together. We've got each other's back. It's very hard when life takes the person who's got your back away. Like in the beginning, you would talk about you guys, playing on the chair and twirling around, and with the masking tape, and knowing you don't even have to talk to know what to do. That's what I was talking about, that awareness, the observance, where you can have that communication that is so deep and raw that no one, you know what I mean? It's so pure. And my mom and I have that where we can look at each other. We don't even have to look. I can feel her waves in a room.
Oh, that's
Like
beautiful.
it's
It's
time to
beautiful.
go, so it is beautiful and lucky. But when you lose that, that's a then I understand her pain. I mean, she was in bed for like a while. Like it was shattering. So I feel, for you on that with your brother, because and from there you have to now like it makes it very difficult to trust again.
Sure.
Even,
Yeah. 100%. It was probably the most life-changing, not probably, it was the most life-changing event that I went through, and I went through a lot. But my brother was, he was almost 2 years older than me, and he was my protector. We were always together. We went everywhere together, and he died protecting me. He died trying to make sure that I was safe. And, from there, I developed, obviously, survivor's guilt. I immediately developed horrible night terrors that have lasted a lifetime. Through my healing in the last 5 years, they definitely got a lot better, but I still have them. But the crazy night terrors where I'd run out of my home or my hotel room in the middle of the night asleep, running from whatever's trying to kill me. But I also lived in guilt and shame my entire life because I blamed myself for my brother's death, and then just not having him in my life. But further to that, it made my already crazy mom, my already insane mom, go even madder. It created an environment of blame for his death that she took out on me, and which is why her physical abuse was focused almost solely on me and not the other three kids. She remarried, and I inherited two stepsisters and then my younger brother. But her physical abuse was almost solely directed to me, and it made my father leave us. So, I lost my brother, and then I lost my family. My whole life, I blamed myself. And so working through that has been, that's been a lot to unpack, if you will. But it's, I'm definitely getting there. I'm much better than where I was 5 years ago.
Well, sometimes I think you have to do other things, like, I know that you've worked really, hard in your professional life, the corporate world as well. Unfortunately, part of that was, hey, we're going to try and kill you too. That's not a helpful part of it. But being good at a career helps you focus on it. It's part of moving forward, right? It's
Absolutely.
like you're busy and not. That's why I was saying at the beginning that I should never use the term pity party, but it is. You either sit and wallow in it. You're allowed to have a moment because you need to let it out. But in survival, you can't stay there. You can't. You have to move forward. And we do it in different ways. And some people, it becomes substance abuse. Many people, it becomes some other form of abuse. And that cycle will continue. And that's what's so sad to me about all of these kinds of situations in life. It like one person, Nancy and I were talking about it. We have a friend. It's a whole other story. But I can't. I was talking to her last night. I said, "Can you believe this? One person screwed up this many lives, and it's still going. This one abusive son of a, you know what, did this, and to this day, we're talking almost 30 years later." That cycle has just blown and blown and
Oh,
blown and
that's
blown in
horrible.
certain family members who don't realize. And I'm going, hey, dudes, this is what's going on. I can see this is the cycle, but no one wants to hear the reality of it because they're not in a place to hear it because now they're adult, but they're becoming that. It's very creepy.
You got to stop the cycle. I mean, you absolutely have to stop the cycle. And I feel, I definitely did that. I stopped the cycle of abuse.
Right on.
I did not succumb to any addictions. I guess if you, oh, maybe I was a workaholic, but that was the only holic
That's a healthy thing
I
because you're learning all the time and you're putting
was.
yourself in different situations and challenges with, and when you go through challenges, even if you fall down, it teaches you to get back up again, right? And that's all in your story is you just keep getting back up, and I really appreciate that. And I want people to understand, like, you can get back up. There's always a
Absolutely.
way out. Sometimes it's not immediate, but have that inner strength to move forward. Have hope. It doesn't. And don't think that if a bunch of crap keeps happening, that it's the end of your life,
Yeah, don't get
Well, it
stuck.
could
I mean,
be.
that's
You know
the
what I mean? It
point.
could be, but like if you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like
it
it,
could be, but
yeah.
it might not be. But in the meantime, my message is always do not get stuck, but also don't get stuck in self-pity. I got stuck in living in fear. I did let myself get stuck after the attempted murder, and I for many, many years I lived in fear. And again, publishing this book and writing about that situation has helped shake some of that fear off. And I through my healing process, I learned that I needed to let my walls down and let people back in and try to learn to trust and try to learn to love again, because love is so important. Loving my friends, loving my family, loving the one I'm, my partner, if I'm with a partner. So,
Yeah, and a good belly laugh, man. I don't care how big or small a belly is. That is priceless because you're letting it
it is.
out. That is
That
like
is.
there's certain things in life
It
that a good laugh is
really is.
everything.
Laughter and humor is so important. My dad's very funny. My brother's very funny. I used to be very funny, but through all that I went through, I really lost my humor. So I'm trying to get it back. But I
Oh,
that
just use sarcasm.
is
Sarcasm is it.
it.
Listen, I'm so sick of all these comedians being shut down everywhere. And I'm like, come on, let it out because we all need to have some of that, that edge. Most comedians are sensitive and gone through hell and back, right? And they're just venting it out. And we all need a good vent. I mean, can we just bring George Carlin back? I don't know, but I'll get in trouble again. But I wanted to just before you go ask you this because we're in a very interesting business environment of the Me Too movement. And I just actually did a recently an interview with an attorney that's on our show every month about the bro culture. And we were talking about that. And I said, well, can the bro culture actually affect gay people in the workplace? He's like, holy crap, we're in California. We're not that bad. I'm like, well, so I was just thinking that, the culture is changing, but with everything you've been through in business, can you sit and look at someone and know, oh, you're that way, and then know how to handle it from there, from past experiences, like understand if someone's a leader in something or if someone's trying to manipulate, because I think that's the worst to me is the manipulation.
Manipulators.
Yeah.
I definitely, I'm a very good reader of people. I think it was something I was born with, and I've really honed that. But I'm a really good reader of energy and people. And in business, I've definitely learned, I call it tap dancing. I've definitely learned how to tap dance with different personalities to make sure that, you're catering to whatever personality that is. But I have to tell you, the bro culture, I work in a almost a completely male-dominated industry. And I have worked in 180 cities, managed 180 cities in my career in different regions and territories and companies that I've run. And the worst place that I saw the bro culture was in Southern California. It was,
Wow, and he's in Southern California.
it was insane.
Yeah, because I said to him, I mean, I've gone through some of that in this country, and I said, well, there's, you'll have a bunch of guys all whispering in the corner. He goes, oh my God, I never thought about it. It does happen. It's true. And then I said, well, but what about if you are a gay man? That's what I was getting to. It's like, for a gay man, and then there's bro culture in the same office. How is that? He says, well, most people are pretty open here now. I said, but that wasn't, and it's not all, it just depends. Not everyone's coming out as they want to or when they want to,
I didn't for
and
years. For years, I didn't share my personal life at work unless it was just a couple of close friends, but because I was too afraid of the backlash, because I did work for an all male dominated company and, a
I hate
lesbian.
that.
It was hard enough to be a woman, add to it being a lesbian. Just no fun. But I just kept at it. I kept my head down and I kept going and I kept climbing that ladder and I refused to back down.
No. No. I don't know. Maybe I think Nancy and I have always just been like not good at working for anybody else because we just say like no.
Yeah, it's
We're
hard. I
just.
mean, listen, I have to say yes to things that I don't want to say yes to, but I think that's just the way it is in the
That's well, yeah.
world.
So
You work for
in your
people.
same company, it's the same thing. If it's your own company, you still have to do things. You do, there's no such thing as going to work and not doing things you don't want to do. I mean, there's clients or what, from
Oh my
there. But
gosh.
yeah, I mean, it is, but that bro culture is there. I mean, and especially if you're in sales too, we've been on business meetings where older men have turned to Nancy and I and said, which one of you is the bullshitter? And I'm like the marketing person, and I'm going, excuse me, I'm just like telling you what we do, like not that, it's just like what did you say? Like what? And that's nothing compared to corp. I know that's nothing compared to what you do in corporate land. But
I could write a few books on
I think
what
you
I've seen
should.
and
I think you
experienced.
really should because this situation is not over. It's not over.
It's not
It's
even
actually at the
close to
beginning.
over. Yeah,
No,
tip of
like
the
look what's
iceberg.
going on for women across the country right now. It's not over.
It's
We're repeating a cycle. Like, talk about the cycle is so again, and that's the other thing I think which is so important about your book right now with what's happening for women's rights. It's very important because I feel like a lot of women are going to be trapped very soon, if not already, with what's happening. And I it's a very there's things out there in this country, and Nancy and I drive through everything in this country. We drive everywhere, and we go on those back roads, and we see what's going on. We
Scary.
live where we go to, so I think it's very important that people understand they're not alone in this world of any kind of abuse. You're not alone. You're not alone in, cult land. They try to like get you into that, but I think that, I don't know. Anyway, I don't know if we're going to get better at it on the cult side other than hoping the internet will help. I
Yes.
just hope,
More education, more education.
Yeah. And
And
more books like yours,
people realizing that there's more and better out there than whatever toxic situation you're in. There is a way out. And there is a better life for you. It's going to take work, but it can be had. And you don't have to just survive in life. You can learn, so many steps you can take to learn to heal yourself and learn to thrive in life.
Yeah,
And
as you said in the beginning of the book, you can thrive. And that's a thing, you know, and you can always reinvent. You can always reinvent. You can go somewhere else, reinvent. You can do it. It's not poppycock, as they say.
That's true.
That's
Not
a hell of a
poppycock.
word.
I like it. I like it.
That's a hell of a word I haven't used in years, but it just feels good. It's important because I think that's the power of memoir and biographies. These are real, true life stories, and you're living. A lot of these times we hear stories, it's only once someone's passed on, and
Right.
you wrote it while you're alive and thriving. So this
Yes.
is perfect. So thank you so much for the inspiration for those who need it, and for really a hell of a good read. So
Oh, thank you.
everyone, KendraPettyOfficial.com, and the book is out now, so go get it. It again is called I Can't Believe I'm Not Dead: Escaping Abuse, Occult, Attempted Murder, and Other Insanities. It's out now by Kendra Petty. We also want to thank our friends over at booksforward.com. Thank you so much, Kendra.
Thank you, Lisa. This has been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you letting me share my story with
You
you.
bet. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.